Sapphire Running Zone podcast.
Hi everyone, it's Tim, and today we are off to Melbourne, Australia, to talk to Josh Donchie from Fight Parkinson's. Josh is one of Australia's leading fundraising experts, and he's got some great tips and hints to help you with your fundraising. He's also going to give us a bit of an insight as to what life's like inside the charities and all the effort that they go to recruit runners and encourage them to fundraise as much as they possibly can. So welcome, Josh. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for having me on, Tim. It's been a fun ride. I've been in the not-for-profit sector for 15 years now, heading up different fundraising teams and running a lot of campaigns and a lot of events across four charities now. And it's been a good mixture in terms of small charities, larger charities, some with government funding, some without government funding, and just the different challenges that each of them present. So it's a sector that I love, I'm very, very passionate about, and always love to try and spread the word about people supporting charities in any way they can.
So when you were at Beyond Blue, talk me through that Run Melbourne campaign that we did together. That was an interesting one.
Yeah, absolutely. Beyond Blue was a really amazing charity to work for. The work we did in community, and I started there in 2012, and it was really at this really great stage where depression, anxiety weren't always talked about, but they were just starting to be really talked about a lot more in the media and really breaking down those stigmas. But one of the things that when I started, I got told was, you know, we don't want to ask people for money. And I'm like, okay, I'm heading up fundraising. How do I raise money when I'm not allowed to ask people for money? And I said, well, let's engage the community in a way that gets them engaged with our organization and get them to do the asking. So it was a very different mindset for me, because traditionally as charities, that's what we do. We ask the community for money, they support us, and people's generosity is amazing. So I then looked at different ways in which we could engage the community, and there was a really natural synergy between obviously being active and looking after your physical health and the benefits that has to your mental health. And rather than put on our own events, which obviously carry a huge amount of risk in terms of cost, set up, staffing, all those things, I looked at the existing running events that we had, not only in Melbourne, but all around Australia, to see how we could leverage those partnerships. And with that, that's how we got involved so heavily with Run Melbourne, where we could have people take part in Run Melbourne and actually fundraise for us. So we don't have any overhead costs in terms of setting up events or anything like that. So it was really just to try and leverage all these different opportunities. And what ended up happening is that we built the biggest running program in Australia. And Run Melbourne, since we were based in Melbourne, was a natural fit to start off with. And it sort of just grew and grew and grew from there.
Yeah, that was interesting, because it was obviously you guys had guaranteed entries in the event. And obviously things have changed quite a lot over the years. And guaranteed entries are less popular now in some events than they were. And there's definitely an emphasis on trying to get runners with their own entries to raise money for charity, which, you know, when you were doing Run Melbourne, there were, there was a finisher marquee at the end there for runners to enjoy. Those are the kind of perks that we really need to be ensuring that all runners who run for charity get the opportunity to be involved with, finisher medals, etc. You know, obviously it's important for the charities that as many own place runners raise money as possible, because it's not just about the money, is it? It's about the profile that they give you on the course and before and after.
Absolutely, because we had a program where if you raise $50, you get a singlet to run in. And that was an amazing thing for us, because while the singlet might cost us $8 or $9, by making the threshold to receive the singlet so low, what happened was the average person would raise in excess of $250, and we would raise in excess, we had so many people raising in the thousands of dollars. that by creating that low threshold, we activated a really high percentage of people to actually fundraise. And what that did is it gave them a really sense of community and a sense of they're making a difference. So many people either had gone through some mental health struggles themselves or knew someone that had. And by taking part in it, it really helped them have a sense of purpose of they're running for themselves, but they're also running for, you know, themselves or a loved one. So it had this far overarching thing where at one stage we had over 450 runners in Run Melbourne in 1 year. Wow. And now and then you'll just see this sea of blue. And from a brand awareness point of view, it was great. Having the end marquee was fantastic because given our brand profile in the community, we also had a lot of the general public come up to us and they would say, oh, I know someone or I've gone through something. I didn't know I could do it for you. And that really helped build it from year to year. And we also put in some extra incentives in there for people. So it really helped us not only raise a lot of money, but it's really interesting that when someone raises money for you and you can demonstrate the impact that that money then has on the community, they actually get a massive benefit out of it as well from a feel-good factor to know that they've done something good and then they would come back. And our returning fundraiser rate, I think the industry average was below, 3 or 4%. So majority of people do it for a charity once, and then the following year they may do it, but not for a charity. We had 22% of our people come back the following year.
Wow!
So it was absolutely amazing. So I think having that, focusing on that engagement with the supporter, had a really massive effect for us.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that a lot of those guys who ran for you actually found the fundraising a lot easier than they thought. I think some people, when they start out, they think, oh my God, I just can't raise $200 or $300. But actually, it's a lot easier than you think. And once you get going, it's amazing how the momentum builds, isn't it?
It is. And that's one of the reasons I made the threshold to get a singlet so low.
Yeah,
good idea. Because we would have had in excess of 10,000 runners a year across Australia. And out of all those runners who actively decided to fundraise, only two raised the $50.
Gosh.
So by making it so low, what happens is that if they, put a post on social media, they send out an email or a text message, people are engaged by that. People want to support their friends who are doing something good for the community. And all of a sudden, they would raise $200 or $300 by just doing that. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like, well, hang on, if I keep going, if I do something in my workplace, or if I just, follow up a few more people, we could get to $700 or $800. Our average amount raised for some of these events was between $600 and $800. So we would have a lot of people in the $200 and $300, but we would also have a lot of people in the $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 mark. Yeah. Because they just got so engaged.
Yeah, and they just, it's all about the momentum. It's amazing. Once you get on a roll, you keep then increasing your target a little bit, and it's just amazing what you can achieve with just some focus and some determination.
Yeah, absolutely. And a little bit of banter amongst family and friends. I mean, the online donation pages, I think, are one of the most powerful things that ever got created, because people have an option. If I send it out to all my family and friends, they could choose to not donate, but everyone can see they haven't donated. So it almost creates a little bit of peer pressure and a bit of peer fun amongst your colleagues or your family and friends to go, oh, I better chip in $20, $50, whatever it is. So there's an interesting psyche behind all that as well. So and the best thing about online pages, rather than some physical events that might have donation boxes, no one puts $2 on a donation page. No one puts $5 on a donation page. It goes on your credit card. It's usually a minimum of $20, and it just raises so much more money.
Yeah.
And the best thing for the charity is we then get that data that we could possibly then engage that supporter and donor down the line as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many positives for everybody, and the runner gets a better experience as well because they're part of a team. The training means so much more when you're actually raising money for a charity as well. So everybody benefits. And I think one of the issues is a lot of people, when they're running for a charity in a big event and they've got a massive target to raise, that can be intimidating. But running in on your own entry or on a guaranteed entry in a smaller race, the pressure isn't as great. And I think it's the big numbers when people talk about having to raise $3,000 or $5,000 that can feel daunting. It actually isn't that difficult if you really put your mind to it. But unfortunately, on the face of it, it can appear quite intimidating. So what was it like when you then, in your current role, just talk to me briefly about the differences between the two.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, Beyond Blue had a massive brand awareness, which was great. I then went to Make-A-Wish, and we did quite well out of the fun runs as well, because a lot of people would run for, a family member or something like that. The main thing for me is around the synergies. Here at Fight Parkinson's, we have a much older demographic. 80% of people who have Parkinson's will be over the age of 65. So they're unlikely to take part in a fun run, also due to their physical capabilities. So what we really look to do is to see with their family members or friends will take part in. So it is a lot harder depending on what charity you're in. And also for us, there's a lot of cost pressures in advertising. At some of the bigger charities, you sort of know with your brand awareness you're going to raise the money. So spending the money beforehand on the advertising is a little bit easier and it's not as risky. So, but for me, the size of the charity can matter, but it's also about the synergies and the partnerships that you can build. I've seen a lot of smaller charities who have built really great partnerships, for instance, with some corporate partners and engage their corporate partners to take part in the fun runs with their staff. So there are lots of different ways that smaller charities can be involved in these events and really utilize them really well. We've had times where, and I did this a lot at Make-A-Wish, where we couldn't pay for the guaranteed entries. It was a too big a financial risk. So what we did was, you raise $1,000 and we will refund your entry fee. So that way you're running for free. But what the best thing about this is, what happened was, is that people would sign up and say, yep, I'm going to raise the money. That means I'm running for free. They would be so engaged. We would deliver them the content in terms of where the money's going and everything. When it came time and we were contacting them to say, you're amazing. Thank you for raising the $1,000. Let us know your bank details and we'll refund your entry. 80% of them said no.
Wow, that's
fantastic. Because they were engaged. So there's different strategies in which to go about that, you, especially for smaller charities who can't afford it, to really attract people to run for you. Because if you pay, $100 for a guaranteed entry and then the person doesn't raise the money, that can take a lot of financial risk for charities. But if you say, hey, you buy your entry and you raise $1,000, we will refund your entry at zero risk, because you've already got the money in the bank from their fundraising. And as I said, history shows if you can engage them and show them the impact they're having, 80% of them will just say, no, you keep the money.
Well, that is a great great approach and the ultimate incentive, really, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. What else have you done in the past to incentivize runners to run for you? Not so much when you're at Beyond Blue, but more recently. Have you put anything else on the table, or is that the ultimate sort of approach?
That for me was the ultimate. We had a really, going back to me, we had a really massive campaign where, we had raised $50 and get your singlet. But then I went out to our supporters and said, what do they want? What do these runners want? And they want the gear. They want good gear. And so I went to Two Times You and I said, I need you to donate me 100 pair of your Two Times You running tights. So these are worth, you know, $189, I think they were at the time. So a really big incentive. So we partnered with them and I said, if you raise $1,000, you get a pair of Two Times You tights. Oh, and as soon as we did that, it went through the roof to the point those 100 that I got donated got eaten up really, really quickly. So then I did a deal where we could buy them at a heavily discounted rate. And once again, it was only when the person raised the money. So we've already got the money in the bank. So, and I think it cost me about $90 or something per pair of tights. But if you can imagine any charity who you can say, for effectively $100, when you include the cost of the singlet, you raise $1,000 and it's going to cost us $100. We're getting a 10 times return on our money. Mm. And once again, these people, when they got to 1,000 so often, didn't stop. They went to 2,000. They went to 3,000. So it got to the point where I was putting through these orders for $5,000 and $6,000 worth of tights. But wow, we had raised in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, and once again, they're so engaged. No one, back then I didn't have the run for free offer. Their sense of, you know what, this charity, I'm fully engaged with them. They then came back. Mm. So there's lots of different things that we can do. I think partnerships with corporates, and it is a lot harder in this day and age, to be honest, because so many corporates can be struggling themselves financially with everything that's happening. So I would say to charities, don't always look for free stuff. Look for stuff where there is little risk to you. So I would do a deal with the tights company again in a heartbeat if it meant I'm buying them once I've got the money in the bank. So
So you only had to put the order in once you've got the guarantee that the fundraising money was almost in your bank.
Well, no, it was in the bank because we, when they reached $1,000, we would then contact them. And once again, it's another great touch point. And we'll ring up and say, hey, Tim, amazing work. You've reached $1,000. Thank you so much. Let me know what size tights you want and we're going to send them out to you. Mm-hmm. And I'll just do a bulk order every 1 or 2 weeks and off they got sent. So, it was amazing.
Absolutely. So in terms of Fight Parkinson's then, you're now targeting the sons and daughters of people that have got Parkinson's, presumably, in terms of your fundraisers, the ones that are out there doing the events.
Yeah, majority of ours will be, you know, the children, the grandchildren and so forth. And what happens is, once again, you're making it impactful is that if you had a son or a daughter yourself and they were doing it for your parent who had Parkinson's, your whole family is going to get around that. Your whole family sees the impact of Parkinson's on that family member. Mm-hmm. And to know the children are doing something about it, everyone will get behind them. And as I said, it goes much further than just raising money. It creates a deeper sense of connection within families, within communities, all those things. I can only imagine how good, you know, the person with Parkinson's feels knowing that a family member, a friend is doing this for them.
Mm, absolutely, absolutely. So talk to me about the walk in the park.
Yeah, so we have a walk in the park, which is our own event. So when I came here, we had a walk in the park. We were running it in April this year, and I think it's our 13th year this year. So it's our longest standing event, and it's really an event that we use to engage the Parkinson's community. We will have between 1,800 and 2,000 people there this year. We've had upwards of 3,500, you know, pre-pandemic. So the pandemic obviously meant we had to put it on hold for 2 years. And it's an amazing event. And probably only about 10% of people who come actually have Parkinson's. The other 90% is their family. So you literally see the person with Parkinson's and, you know, 10 or 12 of their family and friends around them walking with them. And it's not a timed race. It's just a 2 and a 4K course. But what it is for the people with Parkinson's to do that 2K or do that 4K is a massive deal. Because of some of the limitations they have physically, some people with Parkinson's can fall down, but they get back up. We had one person 1 year fall down 27 times.
Oh, my goodness.
But every single time they got back up and their family stood beside them and they walked through. So when you talk about these type of events, for me, it always comes back to what's the connection to your community? What's the synergies? Why are they doing it?
Yeah.
And once again, to see someone like that complete a 2K course is so much more heroic, is so much more amazing than a really fit person doing a 10K run.
Yeah.
They do that easily.
Yeah.
So I think you need to put things in perspective, and people respond to that. We saw that in the pandemic. I forget the 100 plus year old guy in the UK who walked back and forward. Mm-hmm. In his backyard, just taking little steps and doing small steps every single day back and forth to raise money for the nurses.
Yeah.
He raised the millions and millions of dollars that people donated was because of what he was doing, and it was a massive deal for what he was doing.
Captain Tom was an absolute inspiration.
Yeah, considering him, I forgot it. And that's it. Yeah, and that's so much more inspirational than a fit person running even a marathon.
Absolutely. I think those images from when he was doing that are ingrained on most people's minds. Talking about COVID, I hate it, but it impacted on you, the fact you couldn't have that walk. But we were talking before about this, and overall it wasn't that bad for you from a fundraising perspective. I mean, living in Melbourne during that time obviously wasn't great fun, but from a fundraising perspective, lots of virtual activity.
It was, but it wasn't just virtual activity. It was a very interesting time. And obviously being in Melbourne, we were locked down and in lockdown for more than anyone else in the world, unfortunately, which made it difficult. But while we couldn't run the physical A Walk in the Park event, we created a virtual walk out of it where people would walk for each day for 27 days. And what happened was that during COVID, no one, obviously we couldn't go out anywhere, and disposable income went through the roof. So people had a lot more discretionary income. So we found that people donated more to those fundraisers. And in our first virtual event, we raised twice as much money than we have ever raised in our physical event before, because we had more people actual fundraisers taking part who had a captive audience, and people had a higher discretionary income. All our appeals, so our Christmas and tax appeals, we raised more money than we had in all the previous years, because people had a higher discretionary income. And what also happened was the need for support in our community grew exponentially, which was very tough. It impacted our Parkinson's community in such a negative way, is that people would donate more. So while the physical events, had to close down, if from a fundraising point of view, if you could notice the trends and what was happening, you could actually capitalize on that. And what got bought out of that was a virtual campaign that we still run now called 27 for Parkinson's. So now we run 27 for Parkinson's in October, and we have our physical event back with a walk in the park in March and April.
So you didn't have this 27, you didn't have that pre-COVID?
No, so what happened was, A Walk in the Park was supposed to happen in the August of 2020. And when we all got locked down and closed up in April, May, we shifted very quickly to create it into a virtual walk. And it just gained so much momentum. And people were looking for a reason to, walk around the block and do those things and be active. It raised a huge amount of money for us.
Wow. So that brought new supporters to the charity.
Yep. Absolutely. And not only new fundraisers is, you know, as you're raising more money, they're bringing in new donors.
Yeah.
That once again, if you can properly engage them after the fact, you've acquired donors without it costing you money. You've actually made money doing it. And when you look at new, you know, normal cost of acquisition, it's so much. Having that, doing it this way was a massive positive for charities.
And what was it? What was it like personally in Melbourne at that time? How many times did you down? It was relentless, wasn't it?
It was a very difficult time. So, and my wife's a nurse as well, and so we were sort of in the thick of it. I had two young children, so you just sort of band together and you do the best you can. And personally, I mean, I think the first one, we bought a new trampoline, and then we bought a cubby house, and then by the last lockdown, I'd built a basketball court in the backyard. So you sort of do what you do to get through it all as a family.
Absolutely. And what's it like now with fundraising, with the cost of living crisis?
To be honest, I mean, as I said, I've been in the not-for-profit game for over 15 years, and this is the hardest it's been in 15 years for me.
Worse than COVID,
worse than the global financial crisis. So it's a really interesting time, because during the global financial crisis, I mean, here in Australia, interest rates, you're probably paying 7% on your home loan. They slashed them down to next to zero.
Yeah.
So what they did is they put all this disposable money back into the economy. During COVID, people couldn't go on holidays and do you know, all the things they usually do, eating out. Is that savings went from 7% to 22%. So once again, all this disposable income, so that if you as a charity could harness that. Now, if you only had physical events and you didn't adapt, absolutely, you would have got hit hard. But over the last, you know, probably 18 months, this is the first time with interest rates going up so much and the cost of living going up at the same time with, you know, the cost of goods and services, this is the first time they're taking money out of the economy. So disposable income has shrunk. And that's what our community are telling us. That's what all the stats show in our appeals. So our last Christmas appeal, we actually received more actual donations, because, you know, we're engaging more and more in the community, but we raise less money because the average donation was down because people have less disposable income. So it is definitely, for what I believe, is at the hardest it's been in probably 15 years.
Wow, that's quite significant, isn't it?
Do
you see it getting better, or do you think there's another year or so of this?
I think there's definitely another year or so of this, because we're hoping, obviously, interest rates have peaked. And you never know what they're going to do, that if they start to bring them back down and it, you know, increases people's disposable income, that will be fantastic. But at the same time, so many people are under mortgage stress, rent stress, all these things, that even when they bring it down, it might just mean they can continue to survive. You know, with the cost of things going up, you know, 7-10% over the last 18-24 months, it takes a lot to catch up on that. And if wages haven't gone up at the same rate, it is very difficult.
Yeah, so even more reason why any runner with their own entry in an event needs to be thinking about supporting a charity, because they need it more than ever.
They do, and the need in the community is growing more than ever. I look at our situation, is that calls to our support line grew 54% in the last financial year, because people are in more need. You look at calls to mental health lines, you know, over the last 3 years have exploded.
Yeah.
So then it's this double whammy effect, that with less money in the community and greater need, the strain on all these charities is probably at an all-time, I know it's at an all-time high, because we all talk to each other and support each other. So when you look at these entries into events, if you're doing an event and you sign up and you do it for a charity, and you know you can raise $300 or $400, that has a massive impact for the charity, because Now, if you sign up and do it for Fight Parkinson's, that's money we haven't had. We haven't had to spend any money to acquire them. Mm. We haven't had to print it and an appeal letter or pay for postage or do anything like that. The money goes directly into our bank account. There's no process, like admin costs associated. You know, if we've got to process checks and credit cards and things like that. So it's a really powerful mechanism for charities and a really cost-effective way for money to be raised.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, that's been really insightful, very, very interesting. And I'm sure everyone is listening to this is learning a lot about what it takes to put a running team together, the value of runners raising money on their own entries, as well as guaranteed entries, of course. But there's so much to it. And the need, as we've discussed, is greater than ever. So I really appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us. And hopefully we can do another session at some point in the future.
Absolutely, Tim. Would love to. Always happy to lift the profile of the charity sector.
Great stuff. No, I really appreciate it, mate. Thank you for that. And I'll see you again soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this Sapphire Running Zone podcast. Keep checking back as we have lots more podcasts coming soon.